The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Care and protection for the whole family's health at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Our panel still with us, Eddie Shanahan, Professor Cliona Ní Chealaig and Gráinne Nié. I just want to hark back before we move on, because there's a very good email here, and it's the perspective of a 24-year-old, which we haven't had today on the show. Thomas says, as a 24-year-old, the simple fact is this. Now that our own grandparents and vulnerable relatives have been vaccinated, it's very hard to resist the urge to just meet people again. This is now happening every weekend among my age group, both inside and outside. It is definitely selfish, but also human nature. Once the immediate risk has been removed from those close to you, it's hard not to want to return to some kind of normal and fun life. And Thomas, I think we can all take your point on that one. Believe it or not, we were all of us here were 24 once and younger too. Cliona, you mentioned earlier the Citizens Assembly and the recommendations yesterday, and like quite seismic stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, they didn't pull their punches, and I think one of the brilliant things about it was you know, that the chair said to them, okay, these things are going to have cost implications, they're going to have tax implications, are you willing to pay? And they said yes. And I suppose, you know, there were a lot of things in there that I would have been hoping to see happen, and I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, and a lot of it around care.
Yeah. So really undervalued in our society. I mean, I know you have kids as well. Like, the cost of childcare is huge. And my husband is Finnish. I know I've talked about it before. Yeah. They have a really good state-funded childcare system. You have to have a master's degree to work in a creche. They have really low ratios. The continuing education for the people who work in the creches, the creche teachers, as they call them. Mm. And the maximum that you pay, don't cry now, no matter how many children you have, is €200 a month.
Yeah.
And it's really important.
But people will say, well, they
pay higher taxes, but you know, it's still match, like for me, yeah. It would still work out cheaper.
Yeah, yeah. Gráinne, I heard the government representative on Katie Hannan yesterday kind of saying, forget who it was now from the Green Party, anyway, saying basically the government will look at this, we will prepare a response. I think there was some talk of a committee looking at it and stuff. But we have seen in the past, haven't we, that these recommendations, people kind of go, oh, that's all a bit liberal, isn't it? And then, lo and behold, as Catherine Day was pointing out yesterday, it turns out that the population at large can kind of be in agreement. Is this going to lead to radical change in our society, do you think?
You'd hope, because it has previously, and I just love the Citizens Assembly model for coming up with ideas about where Ireland is going as a country. I was talking to an Italian MEP last week who mentioned it, about how effective it is as a programme for figuring out from citizens themselves how to take a direction, I suppose, for the country. I suppose it depends. You know, and we've seen kind of radical changes in terms of green policies and climate change policies in government. And I think the government is aware that these kind of policies do appeal on a political level to the population as well. Taxes is always a tricky issue, but I think there's a lot of things they can do without going the full hog as well.
Yeah, okay. So a reasonable compromise. All right, thanks a million, Gráinne Nié from thejournal.ie. Thank you, Professor Cliona Ní Chealaig from St. James's Hospital in Dublin. And thank you, Eddie Shanahan, Fashion Retail Consultant. And we'll go over to the newsroom now and Kate Egan.
Thanks, Brendan. A 22-year-old man has died after he fell from cliffs near Garrettstown Beach in County Cork. It's understood he'd fallen into a blowhole. The body was recovered by divers. A post-mortem examination will be conducted later at Cork University Hospital. The young man was part of a large group who were camping overnight on the beach near the old Head of Kinsale. A friend who'd gone to his assistance was rescued and taken to hospital for treatment for hypothermia. Iraq's Interior Ministry has said at least 82 people were killed and more than 100 injured in a fire that broke out at a hospital treating COVID-19 patients in the capital, Baghdad. The Prime Minister, Mustafa Al-Kadhimi, has called for an immediate investigation. Medical sources say the fire was caused by an explosion due to a fault in the storage of oxygen cylinders. 3 days of national mourning have been announced. The Indian capital, New Delhi, has extended its lockdown for another week as the country set a global record for daily coronavirus infections for a fourth day in a row. Just under 350,000 new cases were reported in the past 24 hours. Many cities are facing a critical shortage of oxygen. Fire crews in County Kerry are continuing efforts to contain a wildfire in Killarney National Park. Gorse is still burning at lower levels in the park. Northern Ireland's Fire and Rescue Service is also continuing efforts for a third day to bring a gorse fire under control in the Mourne Mountains in County Down. And now the weather.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. The award-winning Grant Vortex condensing oil boiler, helping Irish homes benefit from lower cost heating. Visit grant.ie.
Dry, mostly sunny today. Sunshine turning hazy at times during the day. Highest temperatures 14 to 18 degrees generally. It'll be a little cooler along southern and eastern coasts. And now with a look ahead to this afternoon's This Week programme at 1 o'clock, here's Carol Coleman.
We hear from the coastal town of Kinsale about what kind of summer season hoteliers, restaurateurs and retailers are hoping for. Minister Simon Coveney on the summer plan to slowly reopen society as greater numbers get the jab. As NIAC deliberates on whether to restrict the one-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine or not, the HSE's vaccination programme lead Damien McCallion will answer our rollout questions. And babies of the pandemic, are they suffering the effects of lockdown or are they healthier because of it? We'll talk to mothers and a leading paediatrician. All that and more on This Week with Justin McCarthy and me, Carol Coleman, RTE Radio 1 at 1 o'clock.
And that's all for now. Back to you, Brendan.
Thanks, Kate. Now, I suppose, in a way, as we come out of crisis mode a little bit, and we found ourselves doing it this weekend here, is kind of surveying the wreckage of the last year a little bit. So our psychologist, Tony Bates, is with us now from Sligo. Tony, welcome.
Good morning, Brendan. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Tony, you think that part of what we've all gone through, and obviously it's been different for everybody and we're all conscious of that, but you think that part of what we've been doing for the last year is holding tension?
Yeah, I think we're trying to find language for what that's been like. And we sometimes use the word trauma. It's different language we use. But certainly, I think, when we think of trauma, normally we think of fairly extreme events, you know, sexual assault, road traffic accident, major disaster. And there are no doubt those experiences are shattering and we're not prepared for them. We can't take them in. We're very bereft afterwards. We're kind of alienated from ourselves and we're kind of alienated from each other. So they are very shattering life events. Life is never the same again afterwards. But trauma is also, you know, not always so dramatic because trauma comes in different shapes and sizes. So we can be traumatized by a kind of a progressive, corrosive threat that we're living with that's kind of below the radar, but it's there all the time in the background. We're afraid of violence about to break out and we're living on edge in that situation. We're isolated, cut off from people and things that we love and that keep us going. So there is a kind of, we're in a state of tension that builds and builds. And then we find ourselves almost not recognizing that we're holding a great deal of tension in our bodies in different ways.
Yeah, I kind of been likening it in my head to sometimes I feel a lot of people, it's like they're driving the car around in first gear all the time. You know, the way car is roaring and you feel you're burning gears and burning the clutch and everything. And like it shouldn't be doing it. But that and eventually that's going to wear you out and wreck the engine, isn't it? So, okay. So I suppose the question now is that hopefully we can start trying to live and deal with ourselves in a slightly different way over the next while. So what do we do with this tension we've all been holding?
Well, I thought to illustrate it, I would give a little example from my own life. And I have four ladies that I keep locked up in a shed in the back garden. Now, I'm not completely cruel. I let them out by day and they provide me and the neighbours with beautiful eggs. These, of course, are my four lady hens. Now, here's the thing about them. They love to explore. They go all over the place, and they very often end up in the field next door, the neighbour next door, and they start then to holler. They start to make all kinds of noise that they've been separated from their buddies, and they'd like me to reunite them. And so I climb over the fence and I go down and I pick them up. Well, before I pick them up, I try to catch them. And even though they know me and they trust me and I've never hurt them, they still go into fight or flight. So they could peck me, or they'd certainly run around. And then at a certain point, when it's obvious to them that they're stuck, they go into freeze. They stiffen. Their shoulders sort of are raised, and they just go absolutely still. And then I can lift them up, and I gently put them down where they need to be in my garden. And they sort of, you know, they fluff up their feathers, or they just shake themselves a bit, and they rejoin their buddies. And I think that is the normal way that we cope with these stresses that life brings, that we can lock up at times, but then we need to release them. And I think we're in a time now where we need to recognize what we're holding. And I think of it in terms of three R's, you know, recognize and then release what we're holding and then re-engage with our lives. And release is letting go of the tension inside us, because that's, we need to let the body know it's okay, it's over. Treatment for trauma is basically, they've tried lots of things, but it comes around to helping people to connect with our bodies and let their bodies know the danger is over.
It's a physical thing, Tony. We're not going to think our way out of it.
Exactly. We're not going to think our way out of it. There's no use saying you're fine now, everything's great. No. You're holding it. And that's what we missed for a long time. And we would have people talk about things forever. But actually, they if they're in a state of fear, we need to go to that place and help them to kind of relax. And so their body knows it's okay. Either that, it's safe to relax. I remember sometimes it's not safe because the threat is still ongoing. And so that's not a time when somebody can release. But for most of us at this time, as we're coming out of this weird year, it is time to think about releasing. And I think that's what you're seeing, and your panelists were talking about that is what's out there, is this evidence of people releasing in different ways. Some we might not like, but that is the point. We need to release. Okay.
What's a healthy way that we can do it in our own lives? Like, is it like meditation, yogi kind of stuff? Or?
Well, it's funny. Yoga is very good, particularly, and has been found to be really helpful because it connects people back with their bodies. Mindfulness can sometimes. People can dissociate because they go into it and they're looking for a kind of a blissful experience sometimes, and they try to get away from the body, so that doesn't help. Alternatively, they sit, they relax, they open to themselves, and they feel just how much pain is there, and that can be a bit hard for them. Yeah. So yoga in that sense is very good at getting people. Now I practice every day, and I think it's amazing. So I'm not in any way casting doubt on that. I'll tell you what's really helpful. What's really helpful is actually when you notice where you're holding tension. I mean, actually, see, can you even exaggerate that a little bit? Say it's in your shoulders. So if you're a bit tense in your shoulders and from bending over to Zoom meetings, we're all a bit like that, try and just make yourself a little more tense, and then and just contract the muscles even more, and then let them go, you know, just allow them to open. And that contracting and opening, even in gentle ways, it kind of sends the message that it's okay to let down. In mindfulness, what they found is, whereas breath is often a way that we use to center ourselves in mindfulness, what they found in trauma is something slightly different. Rather than go to the breath, which can be a bit unnerving for some people, what you do is you don't try to stop thinking about the thing in your head. You let it be there, but you go to where you're feeling that thing, that fear, that memory in your body, you know, and then you breathe into that place in your body. And again, as you breathe in, you notice it, you recognize it. As you breathe out, you release it. You know, you just say something calming and nice. The other way that is found to be really powerful, and this is going to be, but it's really interesting. So it turns out the gut instinct, you know that term, we all have our gut instinct. Well, it turns out that that's not a metaphor. This is this tremendous truth in this. So we have a nerve, the vagus nerve, that goes from the stomach to the brain. And it's like a highway, but, you know, 80% of the nerves are going one way from the belly to the brain, and only 20% are going from the brain to the belly. So if you like, the belly is doing most of the talking. In trauma or in high toxic stress situations, that communication gets very disrupted. It gets all twisted. We don't know what our belly is trying to tell us. So one of the things that the belly keeps doing is telling the brain there's fire in the hole. You know, there's something not right down here. There's something not. And the poor old brain then is hearing this. And all the guys that are working in the fight flight response department, the brain keeps them on full alert because things are not right. If we could get into the belly and if we could talk to the vagus nerve and get it to send a different message, it's quite possible that it would be possible for our whole body to kind of relax. And it turns out we can do that. And it might sound strange, but it's a very simple method. And Peter Levine, who's probably the best kind of researcher, writer on trauma in the world, this is his method, and it's been very well validated in that. But what he does is to try to stimulate the vagus nerve in the belly. And the way he does that is very simply saying the word voo. I say V-O-O, saying the word voo as I breathe out, okay?
That's V for Victor.
V for Victor, O-O, okay? So I kind of wanted
voo.
Voo.
Okay, so it's a long one.
So it's a long exhale, and voo. I'm letting it voo. Vibrate on my belly. Great. All together now. Now, voo. So you do it about four or five times. But and he, there's a lovely YouTube video of him, and he's talking about doing this with an ICU nurse who just was absolutely at her wit's end, having people be wheeled in and out of ICU and sometimes not make it in the States. And so this can be both helping us to recover to a kind of the war is over moment, sending that message, because, or it can be, I'm on this. I'm dealing with it. I'm okay. So the thing is, when the voo sound begins to stimulate up to the brain, and then you'll notice that your shoulders begin to tingle or tremble. And tingling and trembling is a great sign that we're releasing stress, and we come back in. And after that, it's about socially re-engaging. And that's what we're seeing a lot of also happening. And we need in the next year to give people a kind of a wide berth, because people are going to release their own tension in their own way. And people are going to socially re-engage. And there's going to be a party of some sort for a certain length of time. And then it'll pass and life will go on. But when I was listening to your panelists this morning, the one message that kept coming through to me was that we need to trust people. We need to be very human at this time. We need to, you know, and just really trust that we're all struggling. And these are the normal ways that we come through are we recognize, we release, and we re-engage, we regroup. My chickens, when I take the hen and just put her back with her mates, the mates all gather round. And in fact, when they see me lifting her, they sometimes come to her protection naturally. And when I join them, they all have a little debrief. They don't really say very much, but they just stand there looking as dumb as ever. But they're all close, and they're debriefing in their own way, and they're calming down. So that's what we need to do.
It's interesting you say about the hens coming together. So I suppose, like, sometimes if you're feeling like that, traumatized and stressed out and stuff, it can tend to isolate you from people. So do we need to very much make a point of coming together now to share this aftermath, do we?
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. And again, we're not talking about big trauma here. Yeah. We're talking about little trauma, what they often call the tiny traumas. But one thing we've learned from big traumas is when they happen, people don't know how to make sense of them. You know, so they react defensively. We all went out and we bought toilet paper and bread, and we kind of kept the nest clean and we kept ourselves cozy. That was our first reaction. But we don't quite know how to make sense of it when it goes on and on and on. And one of the ways people make sense of trauma is they blame themselves. It must be something I did, because that gives them a handle on it. It gives them a sense of control. Oh, yeah, I did something wrong, you know, and you've heard of this. I wore a short skirt. I did all, you know, I did something wrong. And they go to shame. And in their shame, they kind of hide under their cloaks of shame, and they wear masks because they're frightened that other people will not accept them. And they feel really bad about themselves. They feel very unlovable. So trauma and toxic stress can make us hide from other people. It's what we all have in common. It's what should unite us. But actually, it can make us, it can separate us. We can hide from people.
Yeah. I'll be killed for saying this, Tony, but I have noticed that some people who got COVID are ashamed of it, aren't they? And ashamed of themselves and do kind of maybe blame themselves.
It's a terrible thing.
Yeah.
But it's also, the other thing is that, you know, in the last year, things that perhaps were not quite healed, you know, were kind of looking for our attention. I always think traumas are like unhealed, unwanted children we have outside the window looking in at our happy, normal lives. And we're afraid to bring them in because we think they'll mess up everything. But actually, we do need to bring them in, and they will greatly enrich everything if we can and when we can. But I think in the last year, they've been tapping on the window for a lot of people. And people are just more.
You mean other things?
Other things that happen. Yeah. And you know, the shame is where a lot of us go, particularly as children, when things go bad that had nothing to do with us, that were not our fault. But that doesn't matter. We still go to a place of shame. And so now, when something happens, whether it's COVID or whether I get COVID or whether I don't get COVID, that's another cause for feeling ashamed. Well, then it must be because I've done something wrong. And I think, you know, the way we interrupt that program, it's like a program that gets set like in our brain. One of the things that happens is when we're very upset at a time like this, that program is more, it's on the screen. You can see it. You can feel it. It's happening. And sometimes a kind word can break that program. It can take out the shame, and where there was shame, there is now kindness. In other words, I got COVID and that was really tough, and there was nothing I did wrong. It just happened to me. So we need the voice. We need an external voice, because we can't say that to ourselves until we hear it from someone we really believe and trust. And then we can say it to ourselves.
There's a sense that in one way you feel we'll never want to talk about this again. Once we've got it over with us, that we think we talked about that incessantly. Yeah. We don't want to talk about it again.
And we need to be allowed to let go.
Do we need to talk about it? Because like in another way, we could end up in talking about it incessantly, couldn't we? Like, I presume it's the same with trauma, that like you could become obsessed with what happened.
James Baldwin has a lovely expression. He said, it can happen that people become trapped in history and history becomes trapped in them. And I think that's what we don't want to happen. And I think we need to release and re-engage, and we need to debrief all those things. And we probably need a memorial day for those we've lost and so on. But we do not need a national COVID Memorial Day every year. We need to be allowed to forget, because that's what human beings need to do. We can't keep up, because there'll be other traumas around the corner that we have to deal with.
Okay, so we need to close this off in some way, hopefully when we can soon. Listen, I meant to ask you there, the orphans at the window, the unresolved traumas,
yes.
How do we let them in?
Well, again, I think we recognise they're there, and we open the door. I mean, I think we need to feel safe. So there's different there's different things that we've locked out, and sometimes it's too much an ask for us to do that for ourselves. So it's, you really need a skillful therapist at certain points to help you to face these things.
Because okay, a lot of people aren't going to have access to that or aren't going to be inclined that way.
Well, and then there's all the other ways, you know, writing about them, that. But at least if you know they're there, and mostly what they need is you could bring them in one by one, and you could talk to someone about them. But I think however we do it, healing is when all of those children, all of those parts of ourselves that we don't like and we would rather forget, hold a great deal of energy, and that's the energy we need for our lives. When we bring them in, the side effect is that we get more energy, we feel more alive, we feel more real, and we get closer to other people because, you know, as we, if you like, get to know the strangers in our lives that we've put outside, then we also can recognize them in other people, and we feel close. We don't feel as judgmental. We don't shove them away. We can actually see in people the legacy or the remnants of their hurts and wounds, and we are just a little kinder. So I think there are things we can do for ourselves by recognizing them is a great place to start.
They want to be seen, yeah.
They want to be heard and want to be seen. And we've got to feel them, and that'll hurt a bit. You're right, okay. We don't heal without opening the door, and that hurts a bit initially.
Just on the broad basics of it, Tony, I suppose, look, we hear a lot about trauma. And as you said at the beginning, we hear about trauma in people who've had dramatic circumstances in their lives. If we have had these micro traumas or tiny traumas ourselves, or if we are on some low level traumatized, how do we know that? How does it play out?
I think the signs, you know, there's the most obvious one is probably that we're holding tension, and our jaw, our shoulders, there's physical signs, yeah, if you like. There are also relational signs in that we're kind of very hypersensitive, and that's a big giveaway, you know, that I overreact to other people, because in a sense, trauma is kind of a lens that I see life through. And if I was hurt before, maybe somebody's going to hurt me again. And maybe I look at you and think you're going to hurt me. So when you say something, I interpret it in the worst possible way. And I say, no, okay. You know, I react. So noticing patterns of relationship where we are triggered is a real clue. Freud, I mean, that's what he started off with, you know, hypnotism and trying to get people to open up through in all sort of cathartic ways. But eventually what he found the most interesting way to access people's traumas was to notice the patterns of the patterns they brought to relationship, particularly how the patient would relate to him. And by really observing that, he began to be able to access trauma. But so I would say, you know, sensation is the royal road to trauma in yourself and to recognizing it's there. And think of every sensation you have as a memory. It's like a body memory, but it's as much a memory as a memory you have in your mind that you're very clear about. Each one is a memory. Each one is a child outside the window. That's one. And then I think noticing what happens and in each other.
It sounds as well like that it's about the story we're telling ourselves all the time as well, yeah?
I think we can, yeah, I mean, yeah, and we have a story, and sometimes we can get trapped, as James Baldwin said, inside that story. And, you know, the story, I was messed up and life treated me terribly and I don't trust anybody anymore and why should I? You know, that's one kind of story. Mm. I think that we need to give new endings to these old stories, you know, rather than just keep telling them and have people kind of keep confirming them. I mean,
they're comfortable as well, though, aren't they? Sometimes, even if they're not good
they're
for us,
very like cozy. Yes, yeah, yes, yeah. Exactly. They may not feel good, but they're familiar. And I remember a woman saying to me in James, as she said, you know, she was getting to a point where she was actually feeling an awful lot better. Had had a terrible life with lots of abuse and trauma, and she said to me, she said, God, she said, I'm not feeling anxious. And she said, Tony, who am I if I'm not anxious? and she was very serious. She was had in that moment a major identity because she had no language for being somebody who didn't feel anxious all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There's a texter here, Tony, saying people are looking at him strangely as he is vooing along on his morning walk. Just before you go, give us the voo again there.
Voo. Yeah, and
okay.
And let it reverberate through your body.
You're vibrating, yeah.
And
yeah.
Your vagus nerve is getting, oh, wow, this is nice. And it's sending up messages to the brain. The brain is telling the rest of your alert system to stand down. The war is over. It's okay.
Okay, and hopefully it is. Tony, thanks a million, as always. I'll talk to you soon.
That's
Tony Bates. Let's take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.